Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, ready to enlighten you with the latest in geek news and what has gone on over the weekend, during the week. It's been a wild week, and we shall get to that. After I let you know, this is the last week that you'll be able to go and get your Dragon Scale Bracelet at a discount off of SuzyQs.com, our sponsor. If you enter in the discount code DRAGON at checkout, you'll get 20% off. This is the last week, so if you've been pushing it off, you only got a few days left, so get in there, enter the discount code, and you will be set with some stylish-looking jewelry. I mean, it is absolutely stunning. And everyone's going to ask you, where did you get that? And everybody wants me to ask that question. When you wear your shoes, your sunglasses, your outfits, everybody wants to know, where did you get that? Because they want to look as good as you. Yeah. Anyway, go to SuzyQs.com. Link is in the page. And you're good to go. And, of course, Kitty wants to talk this week. So last week, while I'm sitting here trying to do the podcast, you may have heard Kitty talking in the background, and I tried asking him questions. However, he was very reluctant to speak after spoken to. He just, there you go, see? He wants it on his terms this week, and damn it, he shall have it. So, this week as the week of virtual cons. The San Diego Comic-Con stay-at-home con, I don't know if it was a big success. I don't know if it was a hit. It's kind of like hit or miss with everyone that I have spoken with in regards to how it went. People that did watch it, I did watch a couple of them. Of course, I had to because I would have been there this year in addition to just kind of, I wanted to see how they tackled the situation of distance and interviewing and just kind of interaction with guests and with fans. Because I know that everyone is wrestling with going forward, what does that picture look like? Cons for the remainder of the year with Dragon Con pulling out. The only big one left is New York and Javits Center being ground zero for a lot of the COVID. I don't see realistically New York Comic Con happening as it normally does. So everyone kind of, I'm betting, was watching this with bated breath, trying to see how does the biggest con in the world tackle something as impactful as COVID. How do you get around it? So with that said, let me know what your thoughts are, because you're going to hear mine. So I'd like to know your reactions if you were able to get online. There were a couple of people that I heard had issues streaming, getting on. There was lag, even, of course, with the interviews and people that they had, which one of the stories I'll get to here in a second, was like super laggy during the interview. So just because you can get on doesn't mean your high-speed internet is as high speed as you thought. So it was a challenge, and they did their best to handle as they could. I mean, you see just basically how good some people's improv skills are and the ability to fill time. Not everyone has a radio background and knows that you need to talk and keep the topic going until something happens or you make it to a break. So it can be a challenge. So if you know a broadcaster's worth their experience and their salt, they do find a way. So some of them improvised well, and it went along as best as you could. So you know, it is what it is. It cracks me up when I watch people do interviews. Not that I'm like, you know, the know-all be-all expert. Even I'm still fumbling sometimes. Sometimes I don't even prepare. I just go in. I know this guy. I'll just ask him a bunch of questions. Speaking of things that I knew know, though, I was right. Or San Diego listened to me, or the powers that be listened to me. Not only did New Mutants come out swinging with an impressive panel, they had the celebrities, they had the proper questions, they even had a few minutes of the film in addition to the trailer. We posted it up yesterday to start the week off, because I think, I mean, a lot came out of San Diego Comic-Con, but I think this was probably, for me, the second biggest piece of news that I'm anxiously awaiting for, because I know Marvel kind of tiptoeing into the horror genre, the X-Men's curse. I mean, this film has just been you know, travesty after travesty. So finally, we get a trailer, a new one, which, of course, they even poke fun at themselves. They realize just how ludicrous things have been when it surrounds this film. I mean, by the time we see this, Macy Williams will probably be married. So, you know, there you have that. The thing is, though, the trailer and everything that we saw in the first few minutes of the film with Danny Moonstone and just that whole entrance is spectacular. I can't wait for this film, and it's taking some pretty impressive characters from the comic. We do get hints at the villain, which is kind of a multiple story arc in the New Mutants. It's how the New Mutants issue one started. There's also a story later with Danny around the bear. So this is it looks like it's pulled from the comics, but with a really, really dark element added to it. So even like the faceless, I mean, it kind of reminded me of Doctor Who villains. That aside, I'm really the insane asylum. All of it just seems so super dark, super creepy. We do get some impressive visuals of Wolfsbane's power, of course. That's always been like one of the questions. It looks like we got Sunspot. Sorry, not enough liquid in my mouth. Got dry lips. Sunspot looks like Cannonball. Danny, of course. So the core team of New Mutants. So I really want to see this. And I know after listening to everybody talk during the interview for the panel, even the film creators are at this point looking at a digital release. I think they just want this film out there. The fans, I mean, the reaction from the fans so far has been tremendous. So why not give the people what they want? Right? Sure? I don't know. I don't know. How does that work? I don't know. So that's inspiring. It's great. So give it. Or just open theaters. One or the other. We'll see. I know Regal is talking about a September open, an August open. We'll see. I know Tenet, which is that new film that everyone was supposed to be opening with, has already been released across the pond. So I'm sure we will start seeing feedback on that film, and whether or not it appears in theaters or if theaters are open remains to be seen. But I'm just dying to get into a theater at this point. I miss them. I'm tired of watching everything from my couch or from my desktop because I don't have a comfortable chair. So I should probably buy a new chair, right? No. What else? Oh, and other panels. Other stuff that went on. Of course, the toy stuff is great. Lots of stuff to cover there with Funko Pops and things coming out. But we'll talk about that another day. The other story, and this is my favorite. This is my favorite story. And the interview, this is the interview that I was referring to, that it was just a little kind of choppy. Craig Charles, who plays Lister in the series Red Dwarf, had a bit of a lag when it came to his interview. But they did have the entire staff of Red Dwarf, which you may or may not know. I have this huge love for Red Dwarf. A friend of mine and longtime supporter of the page, Titus, him and I started watching this series way back. And believe it or not, this series has been going on for 30 years now. And it doesn't look like they have any intention of stopping. So they debuted Red Dwarf, The Promised Land, during their panel, which goes about 45 minutes. And this one is not a series. This is an actual film, but it's extremely important. It's very crucial. And if you're a fan of Red Dwarf, you're going to be extremely excited to hear what the film is about or what's going on with it. If you're not familiar with Red Dwarf, quick rundown. Guy goes into space on the mining ship Red Dwarf. There's a meltdown. He is the only one to make it into cryo sleep because he is basically being punished for bringing his cat Frankenstein onto the ship. So there you go. Fast forward a million years after the half-life has expired and radiation levels have dropped down low enough, Lister is revitalized by Holly, the computer, and craziness ensues. There's a hologram named Rimmer, who is probably one of the best characters of the show. I know everyone kind of goes for the cat as far as the best character, but Chris Berry, who plays Rimmer, I think is absolutely spectacular in this role. Of course, if you ever saw the Tomb Raider series, the two films with Angelina Jolie, he's her butler. He's quite hilarious. And I like I said, I love this show. This is just absolutely so well done, so creative, and takes so many shots at society and does it really cleverly and very well. So, I can't wait to watch this. So during the interview, we do get kind of a trip into the film and what's the premise. So when Lister wakes up, an entire society has already risen and left the ship, and it's all based off of Dave's cat, Frankenstein. So they have developed an entire humanoid cat-like species. They grew, they flourished, and they left the ship and left one behind, which is now Cat in the show, which is delightfully just off the wall, and he is a human cat for all intents and purposes. So now, fast forward, even more fast forwarding, to the current story, and that is The Promised Land. Evidently, finally, from the first season, we get to find out what happened to the cat species that grew up on Red Dwarf and left. So they go wherever it is and run into some of Cat's fellow species. And this is all based off of just Dave's cat Frankenstein. So I can't believe they're finally going to do this. And even the creators during the interview were like, we want to do something that is going to take people by surprise. We didn't think anyone would see this coming. And I agree, no one would see this coming. So it is by far one of the best reveals for me for San Diego Comic-Con. Just because of the premise, the story, and the characters, and just the love for the show. Now, you're probably wondering, where can you go to get this? Well, it is really, I don't know, difficult, but another streaming service. But this streaming service may or may not be as bad. It really kind of depends. And of course, they do give you your free, 7 days to view it. It's called BritBox. And it's a streaming service that has all of like the BBC shows. So if you're a big fan of anything from the BBC network, this may be something you're interested in. It's a streaming service for $6.99 a month for US dollars. And it has a lot of different shows. One of them, of course, Blackadder, which really is tempting for me to get in there. But I know, I think it was Sid and Stacy I saw on there, and a bunch of other just really nostalgic shows. And I know it has all of the classic Doctor Who's on there as well. So that may be something, just something you might be interested in. But the Red Dwarf Promised Land is available now. And like I said, I know you can do the free 7-day trial. And I think that's kind of the only way you can get it. I saw pictures, but I couldn't locate one of it being available on Blu-ray. So I don't know if you can find it, if you can get it, or if they're just kind of teasing it at the moment with it being a movie. Who knows? But, yeah, there is no indication that this is the final installment for the Red Dwarf crew. During the interview, during the panel, they did say that there'll never be a final episode. That if it stops, it just stops. Just because the final episodes suck. And this is their words. when you know the actors ride off into the distance, we don't want to do that show. We just want to stop when we stop. It's just we don't know where we're going to stop. And this is a direct quote from the team, and it's kind of fun because they're even saying at this point there are no egos. There's no, you know, I'm the bigger star. I'm this. I'm that. And there's been some turmoil. There's been some creative differences over the years for this team. But now, after 30 years, they just want to produce something that the fans love, that is of quality. And it looks, from the clips that I've saw and the jokes that are in there already, yeah, I'm totally on. And as soon as I get done with this podcast, I will be watching it. No doubt about it. And hopefully you will too. Just to share my love of Red Dwarf with you, with the listener. You can tell me who your favorite character is. Also, in news from the con, Bill and Ted Face the Music. The bigger trailer landed, and it's, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say that it's definitely not a reboot. It's nothing like that. It is a continuation of the story. And Alex Winter did, you know, release a lot of input after the trailer landed and everything that was going on for San Diego Comic-Con. And they're not totally against a video release as well. In fact, they're kind of pushing for it and maybe skip the whole theater release, which really makes me sad. And I don't know if I would be as inclined to see it, because I think this film is definitely a popcorn movie. And if you've read the Meat and Potatoes movie reviews that we post up, you know exactly what I'm talking about. This is that film. This is one you need to see in the theaters for the whole experience. And I think if they do the direct-to-video on demand release, it's going to just take away from the energy that they've put into the film. The special effects are top shelf. Without a doubt, what I've seen so far is definitely like, wow. I can see where all of the money went that these guys raised for the fundraiser, for the GoFundMe. And it looks well spent. I mean, Keanu Reeves, he looks just so awkward. I think he's just done too many kung fu films to really... Because he's just kind of, I don't know. I think he's waiting to just someone to jump out of a bush and jump him. Because it doesn't look right. All right? I mean, he's an incredible actor. I love Keanu Reeves. He's a humanitarian like no other. But he just, I don't know. I think he's past comedy at this point. Like, you know, like a lot of actors. He's just past the comedy. He's not a serious actor, and he can definitely poke fun at himself. That is without a doubt. But He doesn't take himself too seriously, and that's fun about him. I do, like I said, I admire Keanu Reeves immensely. So I definitely want this to work. So they're saying right now that they're going to be skipping their August 28th release into the theaters and are looking at a September 1st debut for video on demand. Now, yeah. Again, I'm kind of on the fence, and I'm hoping that something shakes loose, but I don't think it's going to based on everything that I've seen so far, and that just makes me a little sad inside, because this really, I think, would benefit from a theatrical release. The trailer, of course, we had it up earlier last week when it premiered, and the feedback, even people were messaging me directly just going like, wow. Can't wait. Want to see it. Come watch it with me. relive the old days, you know. So getting the band back together to watch Wild Stallions and see Bill and Ted Face the Music. I honestly think this will be just a tee up for their daughters who are heavily... well, I don't know heavily, but they are... They may not be heavy in the film, but they are spotlit a lot in... Highlighted in the trailer. So, I don't know. And then, of course, we get Death back, and you can't go wrong. My only hope, and my fingers crossed on this, is they do something for Carlin, that they stop and kind of give him an acknowledgement or a nod of something, just to kind of, just kind of as a nod of what he deserves. Just because it's Rufus, and that he I wouldn't say made that film, but damn, it's hard to ignore the contribution and the presence of George Carlin in the first one. Anyway, moving along, other news out of San Diego Comic-Con. The Walking Dead creator offers up some info on the Rick Grimes movies, and really this wasn't, I mean... There wasn't a whole lot of news on this. It's basically the same story that everybody is suffering from of we don't know where we're at in production. We've got some stuff laid down. We've got some things going on. But it's difficult to say when and where they're going to be able to resume. And this is a perfect example of that situation. I mean, you've got everyone is dying to see what happens. Rick has been gone from the show, which feels like forever by the time we get back to The Walking Dead. And, you know, now Michonne is gone. We get Maggie back, and they're saying that we're going to get some additional footage coming up for the remainder of The Walking Dead season that kind of got cut short prematurely because of everything that was going on. And we're also going to see more in Fear the Walking Dead. And of course we've got the new show that is coming out. So Andrew Lincoln, who plays Rick, of course, wants to go back to work, and the film is supposed to be a trilogy. But as we're sitting right now, Kirkman also, you know, addresses the topic of everything that's going on, trying to put something out there to keep fans, you know, kind of excited. It's hard to ride a wave of enthusiasm when the wave's a dull trickle. And, of course, Kirkman is saying, you know, he understands that everyone is stressed. The team is stressed from a production side. The actors are stressed because, you know, everything's going on. I think at this point, Andrew Lincoln is really looking back thinking, I shouldn't have left the show. And there are rumors circulating around that he might be coming back. So I don't know if that's absolutely true. Especially when they put so much into his departure and the weight of everything. I think if he shows up, it would be kind of like a mixed bag of, wow, you're back. Wait a minute. Fuck you. Where have you been? And why'd you let us sit out here twisting our heels for the last, you know, few years? It's not like a small little amount of time. It were years. Ass kicker's no longer a baby. So... What what does this mean for us, the fans? Good question. Really doesn't mean anything. Again, like every other production, same thing for Winter Soldier and the Falcon. Falcon and the Snowman. They're also behind with their production, and they keep rumors. Nobody knows when they're going to get back to work, when they're going to see release dates. So it's kind of a little depressing as a fan to what's going on. And I get it. I'm with you. I want something to watch. I want to see something that's going on out there. But it is particularly difficult. So it leaves us to watching what's going on. And that brings us to this week's Shakedown. That's right. This week's Shakedown, I am focusing on what I'm watching, and it is by far something I have eagerly awaited and couldn't wait for it to finally hit video, because I didn't get to see it in the theater, and when it came to Amazon, jumped at the chance. Of course, I'm talking about Ip Man 4, the final story in this amazing, absolutely compelling series featuring Donnie Yen as Ip Man, and so if you're unaware, it is now. See, this is where it gets a little funny, because I've read different articles and I've spoken with different people in regards to Ip Man, and of course this is based on an actual person who was, I think, regarded as one of the best, if not the best, kung fu martial artists, and he was even credited with training Bruce Lee, but I don't know how extensive he trained Bruce, and how much of Bruce was, of course, you know, self-taught and all the other stories surrounding Bruce Lee. But this is about Ip Man, whose story starts in World War II. And the Chinese and the first Ip Man is glorious. It really drives a lot of how you perceive the character and what's going on. Then Ip Man 2, which I like the best, to be honest with you. I love Ip Man 2 probably out of all four films the best, just because of the story, the characters, and just the overall feel. It has that nostalgic feel of kung fu films that I loved as a kid, growing up watching, you know, the Bruce Lee films, Seven Samurais, all of that. It just had that classic kung fu feel to it, and again, character driven, and Donnie Yen just continues to put on a performance that is unparalleled by any other kung fu actor, martial artist that I have ever seen. Beyond Jet, beyond Jackie, all of those guys. Donnie is just wow. Just wow. Of course, Ip Man 3, which a little more current, and is probably one of the best fight scenes out of the series. I mean, you get the great one in the first Ip Man at the end, but there's this fight and of course the second one is nothing but fight scenes, because you have rival styles, rival schools that are going after each other, and it just it is a great story, and it is a classic matchup between all of the different houses or schools, and it's really fun. But the third one, by far, with Mike Tyson and the fight between Mike and Ip Man is wow. Again, I just keep saying wow, because I don't know what else to say. Because you're at the end of that fight, and I know you can just go and watch the clip. And I even think I've posted the clip on Moment of Geek a couple of times to just show how impressive. I mean, Tyson still to this day is impressive as a boxer, and is just a specimen, because he hasn't shrunk in size, and he still has that, you know, the ferocity that you saw when he was still boxing. So to see him on the screen acting opposite of Donnie as a mob boss is truly an experience. I mean, it is very unique. So you got these two duking it out, and it kind of, Tyson puts it on a timer. So that's how this fight ends. You never really see who wins and who would win in the long run. Of course, Ipman would probably finish him, but Tyson puts it on a timer. You know, if you can make 3 minutes, then you're good to go. So you see them just go at it. And like I said, it's probably one of the best fight scenes out of all four films. And then, of course, now we get to the final. They do get Ip Man to San Francisco to talk about, you know, what the culture was and what was going on. And it's... Like I said, there are a lot of elements from history here. There are a lot of social impact issues going on that are addressed in this film that you look at and you're like, wow, you know, I can't believe it really was that way. And it looks like they did their homework when creating this world. And like I said, some of it is fictional and some of it is, you know, very, very historically accurate. So we get Ip Man here in the States. Of course, he's visiting Bruce, which we get, you know, some interactions. Now, watching Bruce in this film is vastly different than what we saw in Tarantino's Hollywoodland. And I believe that this has got Bruce down, I think, where Tarantino probably took some... Well, everyone is saying that Tarantino took a lot of liberties with the Bruce Lee character in that film. This seems to have a little bit firmer hold on Bruce, and the guy playing him not only has like his mannerisms and like his body tics down, but his fighting style and his approach towards life it's everything that I have seen in interviews and what I've read from his book and everything else. It works and it plugs in extremely well. And it does give the film a bit of a flow to it, in addition to, of course, what's going on with Ip Man and him coming to the States and him wanting to give his son a better life, because it works with the story. The underground, of course, story, which also kind of relates to the conspiracy and the friction between Bruce and the other kung fu styles and the other schools. They're blaming Bruce for their problems, and you know the huge controversy of Bruce opening up his own school, which is what a thing. And of course, everyone says is why Bruce was killed or whatever you want to believe in that conspiracy theory and all of that. So they do address that, and it does have a better, happier ending for that outcome when you're dealing with the schools and the different martial arts styles. It by far, it was sad for me to see the series end. I loved Donnie Yen's performance. I loved everything about this film. When I finished watching it, I kind of sat there for a minute and just kind of like... Took a minute and a deep breath and just kind of like, wow, all right. I know this is the end. This is the final installment of the film. You're not coming back from the ending on this one. And Donnie Yen has been, like I said, an absolute unparalleled actor in this. I can't wait to see him in the upcoming Mulan. And this, in my mind, is just... spectacular. If you're a kung fu enthusiast, if you like the older kung fu films, this is a must. If you don't already own the series, or if you've just been kind of tiptoeing around it, I know all four films are on Netflix as we speak, so give them a watch and put it with the subtitles. I mean, the English translation is a bit wonky in some spots, and it doesn't translate well, or they were kind of sloppy when they were doing the translation. So, yeah, look at that. But in my opinion, this is a must, and this is absolutely brilliant. So, well done. Well done on all parts. And that's this week's Shakedown. And moving on, we've got, other things that kind of hit that I'm overly excited about, and I I can't tell you how much I absolutely love Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. I have been fans of these two forever. Shaun of the Dead, when it came out, I was just like, you know, this is a buddy film, without a doubt. This is like Danny Glover and Mel Gibson buddy film. I mean, these guys, you know, love hanging out. They have a chemistry, and it looks like they are back together again, finally. And in something that looks to be perfect. Perfect for them and their geekiness. Because I loved Paul. I know a lot of people give me flack about that. But that film, to me, was perfect. And, of course, it, you know, focused a little bit around San Diego Comic-Con and, you know, the plights of nerdism, of what it's like to be a geek, especially from across the pond. So to have these two back together again in a new series called Truth Seekers. So this is actually going to end up being on Amazon and one of their new series. It's a very edgy horror comedy. I've seen the trailer and I've read a lot of stuff on this, and Simon Pegg kind of looks like Simon looks like one of those bad 1990s evangelical TV evangelist kind of guys. And of course, Nick Frost coming in as the burly blue collar worker, and these guys are teaming together to be ghost hunters, and they uncover some sort of document and about ghost sightings, and they start doing their own online channel. So this, I think, is going to be a much bigger hit than the one series that Fox tried to do with the Supernatural that didn't, I can't even think of the name of it at the moment, that barely lasted a season. I don't even think it made it through the halfway point, and it got bunked. The whole premise behind Truth Seekers is, of course, it's a horror comedy about a part-time paranormal investigators who team up to uncover and film ghost sightings across the UK, sharing their adventures online for their online channel, of course. However, they stake out haunted churches, underground bunkers, and abandoned hospitals with their array of homemade ghost-detecting gizmos. Their supernatural experiences grow more frequent, more terrifying, and even deadly as they begin to uncover a conspiracy that could bring about Armageddon for the entire human race. That's right. Not just them. All of us. Gone. Yes, this screams Ghostbusters. And it may be the answer you need for your Ghostbusters fix. Because I really am in on this. So the series will consist of 8 30-minute episodes. And Pegg and Frost both co-wrote the series. So they, you know, had a hand in it, which I'm not surprised, knowing these two for, you know, working on different stuff. Also, who's going to be in it is Malcolm McDowell, who I loved him in Heroes, but of course everyone right away goes to Clockwork Orange. But dude, Malcolm has been in so many things that he's, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be a bad guy. I don't know if he's going to be a good guy, because Malcolm could go either way. I don't have a date for this just yet. I don't even think they released a date. All I saw was the trailer and what was going on for it. But the trailer is available. It is out there. And, of course, I Amazon makes you wonder if they're going to do kind of like the weekly installment, if they're going to drop all 8 episodes. I would not be surprised that we see this on a weekly installment as need be, because I think the binging has gotten a little out of hand, because everyone is like, wow, we put all this work and we put it out, we should at least try and milk it a little bit. Just for the sake of viewing and to build like some energy around their projects. I also think that this is one of those shows that could benefit the most from a weekly release. I know I would binge the shit out of this, and with it only being 8 episodes and 30 minutes each, that's just an afternoon. So why not, you know, kind of pepper this one in a little bit? I know, because the other series, I just remembered Adam Scott, who was like one of the investigators, and there's a bunch of weird shit going on. I think this is probably the better take. As much as I love Adam Scott, and he's, you know, doing wonderful on Don't, that new game show that as out of the twisted head of Ryan Reynolds, I love that show. That show is spectacular. My week has been just strange, because I'm watching I got a routine, because Tuesdays, of course, Stargirl, which, holy crap, this last week's episode, not the new one that's about to hit, but last week's where we invade the headquarters for the bad guys, and just, oh my god, the feels. This show has surpassed any expectations that I honestly had for it at all. Geoff Johns has absolutely orchestrated a masterpiece, in my opinion. It's not overly preachy. It's hugely driven by the villains, which I'm enjoying even more than the usual nonsense. I mean, I know Courtney Stargirl can be a little annoying and bubbly, but she's a teenager. I think that's kind of the take. But then you've got all of the other characters that are involved. You get the little tidbits of, you know, the heroes before, and just these little clues, and you the huge peppering of Solomon Grundy locked in the dungeon. And just, there's just so many things going on in this show that I'm going to be sad when the season finale hits. And then, of course, Wednesday, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is going out with a bang, literally. Huge feels episode on that one last week as well. Then, of course, Thursday rolls around with, like, game show night. So you get Holy Moly, you got Don't, and To Tell the Truth, which all have just been extremely entertaining. It's all worked very well. It's like someone just is catering TV to me. I have no idea what's going on with the rest of the channels or out in the world, but at least I know what I'm watching and why. Speaking of why, also, in television news, this should be available now, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's on BBC On Demand, but the second Doctor, Patrick Troughton, they did an animated Dalek episode just recently. It came out, I think, yesterday. I haven't watched it yet, and I know that I recorded it, so I'll let you know on it. But I haven't gotten to it just yet. But I love that they're taking the audio from the old serial and adding, you know, the animation. At first, it's a little disjointing, and it's kind of, like, awkward. But it's really, by the time the episode is over, it really kind of works well. And it's the Daleks. I can't turn this down. And it's Patrick Troughton, probably the most victimized Doctor when it comes to time, with all of his episodes pretty much all being lost and misplaced or just outright destroyed because the BBC didn't save anything. So if there's one Doctor out there that has been victimized the most of their episodes, it's Patrick Troughton, the second Doctor, which is sad because he's a fun Doctor. So same with the Daleks. Check out your on demand, or if you're like me and you just record all new Doctor Who episodes, it might be in there already, but it is worth a watch just to see. And like I said, it's something fun. What else are you gonna do, right? But yeah, so there's my TV watchings, and I'm also into, like whatever HBO has got going on. I tried doing Penny Dreadful, I did do Penny Dreadful, watched that whole series and left that one kind of like, what? It was just a weird series that I don't know what the end goal was. I walked away from that series just kind of lost and very scratching my head. brilliant acting, some great visuals, but just a story that I'm just kind of like, okay, why? Then, of course, it literally just rolled into Perry Mason, which I am enjoying a hell of a lot more than I liked Penny Dreadful. Both are set right about the same time. Perry Mason is at the end of World War I. World War II is about to happen, while Penny Dreadful was right during World War II. So we've got Perry Mason as a much younger, fought in the First War, noir style storytelling with just I'm intrigued, and the music is set to it is brilliant. It is so pulpy and noir that I am in love with this series. I love the characters, and I don't want to say I was like a huge Perry Mason fan, but you know, back in the day, I remember watching the show. It was filmed here in Colorado. William Catt, who was on Greatest American Hero, was in it. I mean, there was a lot of actors that at the time were popular, and it was an interesting crime show. I mean, it's not like Matlock or anything, but it was still fun, and it was something to watch way back in the day. So for them to take this much younger Perry Mason, and I don't know if the two characters are related, you know, as in the same, but I mean, timeline wise, it could work based on just age and where they're at. But it is so just intriguing and pulpy. I'm absolutely in love with this series. So it's almost done because they're only doing like, I think there's two episodes left right now at this point. So you could even binge this and wouldn't miss a whole beat. I think this has only got eight episodes to it, eight. So we're like down, we're not even doing 10 episodes anymore, people. We're down to eight episodes. I mean, they're quality episodes. They move along. The story doesn't have a whole lot of fluff or anything, which I'm not against, but damn, just eight episodes? And it is quite the drama. Oh my God. And there's like other underlying things going on. John Lithgow is in it, so you had me at that. The interesting thing, and I haven't investigated this, but I see executive producers, Robert Downey Jr. and I believe his wife are the executive producers on this show. I don't know if it's Robert Downey Jr. from Marvel, Robert Downey Jr., but his name's on it, and maybe it is him, but I'd have to investigate that. Just seeing his name there kind of makes me scratch my head, because how many Robert Downey Jr.'s are out there? And so, worth the watch. Last two episodes are coming up, and whether or not this is going to get renewed, I don't know, because we don't know how the story is going to end, but I'm hoping to see a revisit to this series again after they conclude this story. Also in HBO news, this is what led me to this. They're teasing the new Cthulhu inspired series. It's called Lovecraft Country, and it focuses on this family who's it's basically their heritage, their family. I don't want to say credo, but I mean it's basically what their family is for. They are dealing with a lot of dark forces in this town. Let me back up. So the series basically follows this family in 1950s America. Their family has a long history of dealing with, I would say, paranormal, but there's definitely a legacy that they're working with. And it is the trailer is holy crap. They definitely pulled out the stops, and I love that HBO is going into the horror side of it. Lovecraft Country is based on a 2016 novel by Matt Ruff. And the book is great. And of course, you know, anytime I can read something that's Lovecraft based is perfect. The story itself is ripped from one of Lovecraft's paperback books easily from just looking at the trailer. It is premiering on HBO August 16th, so it's not that far away. And August looks to be a huge month for premieres with Boys, with Umbrella Academy, Transformers. I know I'm missing a couple of others, but it is going to be a very full August, and it's about time because I need something to watch. How many episodes are attached to this series, they have not said, but HBO is, I'm sure, probably got 10 episodes for this. The big names that are attached to this, of course, are Jordan Peele. His foothold on the horror holds true, and I'm really enjoying how he's basically kind of become the horror name. Everything that Jordan Peele has put out, I have been absolutely riveted to, completely glued and bought in. He's doing Lovecraft now. This is only a win for fans and for horror buffs and fans of Jordan's work, because this is going to be spectacular. J.J. Abrams is also involved with the project. And yeah, I'll put up the trailer so you can see kind of what's going on, because there's a lot of weird elements going on, and I don't want to misspeak because I don't have any idea. I have no reference to what's going on. I've read the book, and I don't want to put spoilers out there. So we'll post up the trailer. Give me your thoughts. Give me your reflections. Because Cthulhu seems to have like this soft spot for everybody, for horror buffs and, you know, Lovecraft enthusiasts. And just it just is one of those things that, you know, everyone kind of identifies like, oh, Cthulhu and Lovecraft. So, yeah, worth it. Also in TV news, another thing that I will be watching for sure. I got a little time on this one. September 16th, we will see Archer season 11. So he comes out of his coma and he's sporting a stylish cane, and it looks to be the same nonsense and enjoyment that I have come to expect and love from Archer. So there's some changes they say coming, and I'm excited to see it. But we do have some time. The trailer for this also landed just not that long ago. So I really haven't seen much more on it. But it looks like, of course, everyone's back. And what is what's the state of Archer and his mind after being in a coma for a couple of years? Which I think were some of the best episodes for Archer so far. Just the tributes and the fan service of everything sci-fi or, you know, just adventure. Just so much fun. Anyway, the new season, September 16th. Mark it down. Don't forget it. So, there you go. And now we have come to that time of the podcast when we get to talk about restaurants. The restaurants that helped me survive the COVID. This week's restaurant is actually, you know what? I used to go to this restaurant a lot. In fact, Red and I would frequent this restaurant a fair amount of time. The restaurant itself is actually pretty close to my place, so it wasn't, you know, unheard of to go and check them out. Of course, I'm talking about Park Burger Hilltop, which is located over off of 211 South Holly Street, 211 South Holly, over in Denver. You can give them a ring for pickup, and that number is 303-942-0145. Because there's nothing quite like a burger. I get these cravings for just nummy. Of course, you can't do delivery. They are available through Grubhub. They are available for dine-in and takeout. I would just do the takeout. Even before COVID, this place was packed. It was always full. And a wait was not uncommon for these guys. And I think a lot of it can be attributed to their menu, because there's burgers, and then there's burgers and sandwiches, and these guys have just perfected not only their flavor profiles, but the ingredients and what they're using in their burgers. But it isn't just limited to hamburgers. but it isn't just, you know, a local, and that's kind of the fun of it, because it is kind of within walking distance from my place, and it was just kind of a fun, you know, cool restaurant-y local burger joint. But it really is more than that. What ended up happening is Jean-Philippe Flea, I think I said his name right, knowing me, probably not. But he's the driving force behind this. He is a chef, and one of the finest chefs you can find. And his idea was to bring gourmet burgers to an all-new elevated state. So he basically started this grassroots style locally, and I think there's like four different restaurants now. You've got Platt, Highlands, Hilltop, and now in the Rhino District. And of course, mine's Hilltop. That one's the closest to me, and it's the center of town. Everything's available for delivery through Grubhub and through all of that. So give a look, see which one's maybe closest to you, but it is absolutely worth it. And like I said, the ingredients and what he's using is spectacular. It is unique. It is fresh. And I can't tell you what it is. Because like I said, there's this one fish sandwich that was delicious. And that was one that Red usually went towards. And they've got different styles of burgers and different things that you can order. Go online, check out the menu and see. Because their fries were over the top and generous proportions. The burgers themselves are huge. Like what you expect from a burger. Not you know, the thin little wafer patty or anything else. Just a healthy serving of deliciousness between buns. And like I said, it's not limited to just burgers. There are other options. The fish sandwich, fish burger that they have was, I mean, I ended up abandoning the burger a couple of times and going to the fish sandwich just because of how good it was and how well prepared it was cooked. So the chefs are not just kind of slinging stuff for the sake of slinging it, even if it's standing room only. Because like I said, my location that from the house, it was not very uncommon to have to wait to get in. And it was full of everything. Couples, families, single people, even had like a little small bar area that, you know, people would come, and you knew they were from the neighborhood because there's, you know, no cars out front, but the place is packed. So it does indicate to me that a lot of people are just walking to the joint. So well worth the burger, well worth the price. And I think, like I said, they're very generous with their portions. Their flavor profiles are absolutely on point. Their wings, I did try the wings, just to be fair. I know my quest for wings has taken me all sorts of places. Nothing outstanding about the wings, kind of average, but I know that's not what this place is going for. It's not their focus. Their focus primarily is the burger, and it is a gourmet burger that they want to deliver to everybody that comes through that door. They want to give that experience, and like I said, sometimes you have to be patient, but with the current situation, you're probably better just doing a pickup. Call ahead, order it, use Grubhub or Dine and Dash or whatever app that you have. Give them a try. Let me know your thoughts and your feelings on them, because I love this joint. In fact, I'll order from them again probably this week to, you know, just get me through, because that's what I need. I need a restaurant to get me through the COVID, and Park Burger is one of them. And that's this week's restaurant that helped me survive the COVID. And I think that is about the cast. Video game news, there hasn't been a whole lot going on. Well, there has been, but I mean, it's something, it's rehashing, of course, of everything that has gone on over the last few weeks. No new major developments. Marvel Contest of Champions has gotten some major hiccups if you're into that mobile game. Pokemon had a huge community day this last weekend that everyone was excited about. Comic books. It's weird to have a week without like major Joker War tie-ins, but kind of seems a bit of a vacuum. And final order cutoff for Joker, the three Jokers, was this last week. If you haven't signed up for that in your poll, I think you're going to miss out. That is probably going to be one of the paramount Joker stories for all of the Batman fans. I can't imagine you not getting into this. Even if you're, you know, not heavily into the Batman lore, the Joker stories have always just been some of the most compelling story arcs for Batman. He is his greatest villain, of course, but just to find out more and to just dive into this little iceberg that's been floating out there of the three Jokers for the last couple of years is going to be fun. Other than that, yeah, there's not a whole lot in the comic world this week. So, yeah, that kind of covers it. So I know a little bit of a lighter week. I know there will be more coming out for San Diego Comic-Con with clips, news, toys. I did miss the cosplay pictures that, you know, normally flood my inbox once a con is completed, but it was sad. I did see some Ricky Riddle's outtakes that got posted. And it's kind of fun to see some of the cosplayers get recycled that, you know, previous years and all of that. So that was kind of fun. But other than that, it's an interesting void for pop culture. Just interesting. Yeah. But at least a little break. We'll get back to it next year, without a doubt. In the meantime, be sure to go to SuzyQs.com and check out the Dragon Scale bracelet before it is gone. Give us a like, a share. Thank you for listening. Thank you for enduring an hour of nerd babble and sharing us, liking us, giving us any kind of input, questions, comments. We take it all openly and ready to entertain, to incite knowledge. Yeah, I can't say that with a straight face. Anyway, anything to entertain is my motto. We want you to have a good takeaway, and the takeaway is run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.